audio performance is copyright 2012 by Dr. Gwendolyn Huxtred and may not be retransmitted or rebroadcast in any format not previously and specifically authorized by the creator.
So melt spinning, step number one, and here's a drawing that I got from www.fibersource.com that has, it's the Fiber Manufacturers Association. They have lots of tutorials about how they do this. Okay, so I got this picture. So we take the polymer chips, we put them in the feed hopper, and the feed hopper directs them into the melter extruder. So the melter extruder in this case is this huge piece of metal that we can make really hot, and it has this screw inside that drives the chips towards the spinneret. Okay, so it's going down this long tube and over to the box where it will be extruded. Okay, now the box has really cold air in it, so just the minute that that dope comes out of the spinneret, it hits that cold air, it cools down and it hardens. Right, and boy, you know, the textile engineers are the clever ones who can manage to sort of tease those fibers out to begin with, and then we actually just start to pull on them really gently. Okay, so it'd be as if you could harden toothpaste by blowing on it, so then at a certain point you could sort of just pull the toothpaste out of the tube. All right, so we extrude it through the spinneret, the cool air solidifies it, and then we draw it to a line and crystallize it, right? It'll still be kind of a tiny bit warm, which is good. When we draw it, that'll help the chemistry in terms of the realignment of the polymers go even better, okay, because it's still just a little bit warm. And then, of course, we can cut it up into the staple length, into the filament toe, if we think we want to make a spun yarn out of it. Okay, so that'd be like step five. We can do step five for all of them. All right, so the important things to focus on here is that we melt it, and then we use cool air to solidify it. And polyester is an example of a fiber that we will melt spun. I don't necessarily, well, that's not true. I am going to teach you in the next lecture, the one after the next, about which fibers have which method. But if you want to make a little note now, you can. So just to remind you, were you done? Okay. No? You don't have to write step. You could just write one if you wanted. That should save some time. Isn't this cool, though? All right, see, I love the natural fibers because, you know, I like sheep, and I drove by cotton plants, and I don't know, I'm just kind of a natural person. But I love chemistry. So you know what I'm saying? This is just really cool to me. This is cool. And we just use all this plastic all the time, and people don't even pay attention to it. I had a student a few semesters ago that was actually an engineering major and took the class, and then went and did an internship with, I think it was BP, to be honest, actually. But they were super, super glad that she had a fashion merchandising minor because she was an engineering major, but they knew that she would be really, you know, she would understand where their products were going, you know what I'm saying? So when she talked about their polymer products, she understood, you know, why plastic matters. We use it in a lot of products. And someday we'll run out of it, which is why you need to put your bottles in the recycle bin. Okay, because if you don't, you're condemning your grandchildren to be polyester miners, okay, digging through landfills to find bottles, all right, because when we run out of it, we're really going to miss it. So we shouldn't waste it. All right, so you remember this is what happens. They're amorphous, they're all loosey-goosey, they're running all which way, the fiber's kind of big, we draw it, they line up, they get organized, they get tenacious, strong. Okay, so this is just a little drawing again of what happens from a different book. Thought it's fun to have a different kind of drawing. And we do this with pretty much every manufactured fiber, right? Because, you know, we often want it to be smaller, except if we're making like suitcases, right? Even then, we'll draw it to make it strong enough. So we'll have a really big hole in the spinneret, and then we'll draw it to make it smaller. And as I mentioned before, we do this like when we're making candy. So we make our dope, right, out of sugar, and then we'll stretch it and fold it and stretch it and fold it, and all of that helps to align the polymers and make the candy harder. Doesn't make it more tenacious, unfortunately. Candy isn't like that. But we're glad. So So how's the artwork going? People getting it written down? All right, we do have pictures like this in the book. This isn't one from our book, but. Does anybody have any study tips that they think really worked well on the first exam that they want to share? Yes, ma'am. Knowing what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I did that on purpose. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's cheesy, but like when I go back and look at the exam, I like to just double check that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
I just rewrote all my notes.
You rewrote your notes. That's a standard. That's a good one. You know, something else that I'd be happy to help you with, because I really think that this is a really good method. If you feel like you didn't do as well as you think you could, right, and you think that some studying would help, you're welcome to come and ask me. I would be happy to hook you up with somebody that did similar to you. Now, I know you're thinking like, wait a minute, I want the A student. But, you know, for the A student, they totally understand it. And so they may not be able to explain it well to you. But another student that's also struggling, if you're trying to teach each other, right, you end up being able to fill in the gaps, okay, especially if you go out about it in a serious way. So if you realize, like, that wasn't your best performance and you want to get a little more serious about it, I'd be happy to hook you up with somebody else that let me know that they wanted a study buddy, because teaching somebody the material is a really good way to learn it, right? I mean, a lot of what I know about chemistry came from tutoring the baseball team. That's unfortunately why the little sex jokes creep in every so often. But they got the best grade ever, okay? The team, like, totally passed chemistry, turns out, because that's how they could remember it. All right, so let's talk about dry spinning. Again, this is a picture from that website I mentioned, www.fibersource.com. So in dry spinning, we dissolve the polymers, the polymer chips, in a solvent. Then we extrude it, and then we use warm air to evaporate the solvent and make it solidified. And then step 4 and 5 are similar. All right. How many people have ever gotten acrylic nails? All right. How many people have ever walked by a nail salon and got a whiff of the stink coming out of that place? Okay. Everyone can relate to that, even people who haven't gotten acrylic nails. That whiff is the solvent evaporating. Acrylic is a fiber that we use, or a polymer we use to make fibers, but they also use it to make the nails, okay, because it behaves a lot like normal protein, okay, which is what our nails are actually made out of. So it expands and contracts somewhat similar. All right, so what they do, anybody who's had this done will know what I'm talking about. If you haven't had it done, now you know what they do. But you'll notice when they're doing a fill in your nail, so they'll put down the piece of acrylic plastic, but then they'll actually sort of shape it, you know, and tuck it right in and make the back of the nail, you know, the piece of plastic smooth like it looks like your own nail. They'll take a little tiny paintbrush, they'll dip it in the solvent, and then they'll just tip the tip of that paintbrush into this powder. I know that one time when I got those nails, yeah, that it was in like a little crystal box, you know, like it was precious or something, okay, because hello, we're making dope. All right, so then we stick the tip of that brush that's full of the solvent into the powder, and you can see it just kind of like dissolve right onto the brush. And so actually, when the nail artist takes that brush and pats it onto the back of your nail where they need to do the fill, it is like a putty. Okay, it's like dope, all right? And then they use the brush to brush it and shape it, and maybe they need to get a little more solvent because it's starting to harden a little bit. They're an artist, so they know how long they have to work, right? But once they're done, they'll have you sit your nails right there in front of the fan, okay, to harden it. They're evaporating the solvent out, and all that's left is the polymer, and it's now in the new shape that they made it into, okay? So if you know how acrylic nails work, then you totally understand how we do the dry spinning. So we call it dry because we don't need any kind of bath, right? You don't take your nails and dip them in a bowl of a chemical, right? So that's the contrast between dry spinning and wet spinning. They both use chemicals, but I'll explain in a minute. Wet spinning, you need a bath of chemicals, whereas with dry spinning, you just need a little solvent in the beginning, and that's all you need. I want to mention, because people asked me about this a few semesters ago, if you ever have gel nails, anybody ever had gel nails done? Okay, so they're a slightly different kind. They'll put them on. It'll seem the same. The difference will have to do with how they made the piece of plastic they stuck on your finger, okay? So the gel is just a little bit different. They make those by heating they heat the dope. So it's like a mix. It's a cross between dry spun and melt spun, okay? So they heat the dope just a little bit, okay? And then they will, you know, when they cool it, right, they'll use air to evaporate it, but they'll use cold air so that it also cools it down. So I just, you do not need to know that for the exam. I put that up there for, you know, inquisitive nail salon aficionados. Yes, ma'am. Hallucinogenic effect? No.
Does it chemically change the polymer at all?
No, it just disassociates it from everybody else, and then the minute that the solvent dissolves, then the polymer, the MERS just say, yo, and they all get back together again, okay? So it basically just gets it into a liquid form, and then the minute the solvent is gone, the polymers are all like, oh yeah, we know what we're doing, okay? So it doesn't like damage the polymers or anything, and that's why we use it. If there was a solvent that like hurt the polymers, then that wouldn't be good. We wouldn't want to use it.
What's an example of a
dry spun? So acrylic is an example of dry spun.
Okay.
Yeah, acrylic, right? So, because that's what we make the nails out of. Yeah, I knew you'd relate to that, and it'd be easy to remember. And I'll tell you that again when we talk about acrylic. Okay, so you don't, like, today you could just put it in there as extra, and then in a couple days it'll be for real. All right. So wet spinning, I'm just showing you the other side of the picture, because you can see, like, the gray blued out box right there is covering up the dry part, because up there you can see all the spinnerets extruding into those little boxes with air in them. Okay. Hey, anybody have a great aunt or a grandma or something that has one of those, or like a crappy apartment, that has one of those, it's a shower that they made in the bathtub by adding that sort of nozzle thing on a hose? You know what I'm talking about, right? Okay, it's like wonderful for older people, that's why I bring up the great aunt, because you can like sit on a little stool in the bathtub and then use it to like spray yourself like this, right? And you don't have to worry about slipping. Okay, so picture this. Or you're in a hotel and it has one of those. They have those sometimes. You flip a little switch and then it comes out of this handheld thing. So you're in the bath, okay? And then you're like, oh, you know, I just want to rinse the conditioner off my hair. I don't want to actually dunk in the bath. So you use that. What happens if you drop that? The water's coming out. It's like a little handheld shower head. What if you drop it in the bathtub? Okay, yeah, it'll get out of control. But pretend the water pressure is not that high. Okay, so it just drops in the bathtub. What happens? The water keeps spraying out, and you might see like a little dome on the surface of the water where the water pressure is hitting the bath, right? But otherwise, it just squirts into the bathtub. That's what I want you to picture. We have a bathtub of chemicals. Nobody is in it, okay? Nobody's in the bathtub, all right? We have this bathtub of chemicals, and the spinneret is not like a shower head. It's like the handheld thing your great aunt has or the fancy hotel has. And we've actually put it down into the bathtub, and we're shooting it up at a slight angle. So the first thing that those fibers come in contact with when they're squeezed out the little holes in the spinneret is this chemical bath. So instead of having interaction with air, they're having interaction with this chemical. That's why we call it wet, because we have to have this bath of chemicals, not water, chemicals. Okay? And then the minute that that polymer hits the bath of chemicals, a little chemical reaction takes place between the chemical we use to dissolve the polymer and the chemical that is in the bath, okay? And the chemical in the bath basically coaxes the chemical that we dissolved the polymer in out of the polymer, leaving the polymer by itself. And that's the coagulation, okay? So it involves this second bath of chemicals that solidifies it. And then after that, it's just like the other steps, right? Okay? So this is one of the things why it was really important for the FTC to prosecute people who are mislabeling bamboo as a separate fiber. Because when we make rayon from bamboo, this is how we do it. It is not a pure, natural, innocent thing where we just cut down bamboo plants and open them up and look, there's a fiber in there. Okay? We use waste products from paper manufacturing industry. It's good to reuse waste. Okay? But that industry uses a lot of chemicals in the first place. And then we use a lot more chemicals to actually make the fiber. So it's not like all eco, okay? Especially we'll talk later about lyocell, which is a fiber that actually worked hard to do it right, okay, and lost out when everybody was all, ooh, bamboo, okay? Us chemists were all, right? Because, you know, we knew the chemistry behind it, and it frustrated us. You might see dry jet wet, just because I thought it'd be cool once I mentioned a gel to mention something else. We can, in other words, we can mix it up. In this case, they actually have like a little puff of air before it hits the bath. So it's like solidified with cool air just for a moment before it coagulates in the bath. It would be a different formula of the polymer, okay? So that's just to show you we can mix it up. We could do the air and the water or the chemicals, you know. They experiment with all sorts of stuff. Okay, so our three main methods. I'd recommend, you know, making you up some little flashcards where you ask yourself, which one is melted? Which one uses cool air? Which one uses warm air? Which one uses a chemical bath, right? Which one coagulates? Which one dissolves, okay? So that you can feel on top of it all. All right, now I'm going to talk just briefly about what we can do while we're manufacturing, because the chemistry fun does not stop with getting the fiber made. Natural fibers. We have to go clear to the finishing lecture before I can talk about what we can do to natural fibers to make them different. Nature made them. They're beautiful fiber cells. We respect that about them, right? We use them for their beautiful properties. So we love absorbency. We go for cotton. We want, you know, a soft hand and some cohesion. We go with wool. We don't try to make wool into cotton. But we can get in there and monkey around with the manufactured fibers because we're in charge. So we call it modification when we change the manufactured fiber to be something else. It's simple, right? You know, you modify a car, you add a souped-up engine, right? And then it's not a regular car, it's a modified car. Okay, so it's the same idea. Because we're in charge. We control it. Some terminology that you might see used, this will help you sound smart. We talk about the parent. The parent is the pure fiber. So polyester, PET, is a parent fiber. Nothing's been done to it yet. It's just a pure polymer. The minute we make some modification, let's say that we decide it should be red. So we add some red dye or some red minerals to the parent fiber, it has now had its first generation modification. So we could sell red polyester chips. Say you want to make something, here's the red chips. We could sell half the batch of red chips to a company that wants to make firefighter helmets, and we could sell the other half of the chips to somebody who wants to make baby toys. And the people who buy the firefighter helmets, they may add a chemical that conveys more flame resistance to the dope. So they'll melt it down, dump this chemical in, stir it around, and voila, they've modified the fiber. Now, the baby toys, they don't necessarily need to be flame resistant, not a bad idea, but they don't have to be. They may add an antibacterial ingredient to the dope, right? To say, then they can tell the parents, oh, your baby's plastic toy won't have bacteria on it. Oh, those parents drive me nuts. Don't even get me started on the clean, clean world we live in. Okay, but they could do that. And hey, if people will buy it, let's sell it. So that'd be an example of a third generation modification. We did some, and so we got fourth, fifth, whatever. That's the idea. We can just keep adding endless varieties of changes. Lead, no. We actually add the lead. We use lead to make paint, and so the unscrupulous people who find that it's cheap to paint it, so then they would paint the toy with a paint, and it would have lead in it. Yeah. Yeah, lead is a really good way to get white. I mean, you know, the color white. All right. So let's talk about one of the first modifications. Actually, I'm sorry. You can keep doing that. I didn't mean to rearrange your footstool. I'll rearrange this one. Okay. So we can add something to the dope. And this is permanent if you think about it, right? If I had a solution of hot plastic and I dumped in some red dye, right, and stirred it around, I'm never going to get the red dye out of that plastic. When the plastic hardens, the red dye molecules will be inside. It doesn't matter how attracted that dye molecule is to that fiber. It's trapped, okay? It's melted in plastic. You don't need chemistry to make that relationship work, okay? Right? It's like, you know, some world where divorce doesn't exist. That dye and that fiber are together forever. It's permanent, okay? Sort of like a tattoo. Only tattoos aren't permanent, it turns out. So we can add color. Keeps doing this little font substitution here. I use a Mac in my office, and then sometimes it changes things by the time I get here. So what's behind that is the first letters of fluorescent whitening agent, FWA, basically, is the initials. Because, you know, we can be down with the acronyms in textiles. OB stands for optical brightener. Anybody been to one of those, like, laser tag parks or roller skating clubs or something like that where they have the black lights? And if you wear white, then everybody glows, right? You've been to that? There was a movie theater in Nebraska that had the it was the dollar theater, you know, back before inflation, it was a dollar, and they had like a Star Trek theme, and then they had the black lights. Okay, so what it's catching is that there's been an optical brightener added to your white, or to in your laundry, actually, that is designed to make your whites whiter than white, okay? And so under the black light, you can see that it's sort of glowing kind of blue, all right? We don't see that normally. There's not enough UV light in the spectrum normally for us to see that, although deer totally see it, okay? So if you're a hunter, then you want to double check all your hunting clothes under the black light, because otherwise you'll be, that's why you can wear orange, and the deer are like, what? You're like, Bambi, hello, he's right there, he's orange, okay? But if you laundered your camo or your orange vest in detergent that had an optical brightener in it, then Bambi will be like, look at that hunter, the blue glowing thing over there. Oh, that's so cute. He thinks we can't see him. Okay? So optical brighteners, we love to add these to products because in the U.S. we just love our whiteness. Okay? We've got our, come on, anywhere you go. Like whenever I'm in Europe, I can totally pick out the Americans because our teeth are like blinding. Okay? They're like so white. Okay? They're just white. All right? Everything we have is just super. We're just into it. Okay. So we can add color, like this is going to be, this olefin is going to be a football field. Woohoo! Okay, so we added like a very special shade of grass green. It's probably a trade secret, okay? And AstroTurf people will make that into a football field.
Well, did you say that
it's assigned the picture? It says FWA. Oh, FWA and OB are the same thing. It's just two different ways to say it. So optical brightener and fluorescent whitening agent, they accomplish the same thing. Glow-in-the-dark tattoos, of course, and then they're invisible, right. So then you go into your secret spy club, and they look at your hand, and they're like, oh, you're one of us, Agent Titanium. Yeah, because it said titanium up there, that's why I thought of that. It doesn't say it, but that TI stands for titanium. Titanium dioxide. How many people here use a sunscreen with a physical blocker in it, like zinc oxide? Anybody? Yes, it would be in the natural ones. Anybody use the sunscreen? You look in the ingredients, okay, you do? All right, I use it every day on my face because I know that it's basically a really tiny mineral that absorbs light and radiation, okay, and does not quit, okay? Until you wash it off, it goes and goes and goes, all right? Chemical sunscreens, it'll absorb radiation, give me another, and then at a certain point it'll go, oh, I can't protect you anymore, oh, and it dies, okay? But the physical sunblocks, you know, they're basically, you know, if you put the white super thick on your nose, you look like a clown, okay? But it will, and it works if you're already kind of pale, okay? Otherwise, you end up looking sort of ghosty, right? But we use it in polymers because it absorbs light. It absorbs radiation, which is helpful for polymers that are sensitive to radiation, but it absorbs light. Same idea. So we put the delesterant into the polymer to absorb the light so that it isn't sparkly and shiny. It makes those little black freckles that we talked about when we looked at the fibers under the microscope. So TiO2 is the compound we typically use, titanium dioxide, and we can also use it for a sunscreen. You know those mineral makeups? Right, anybody use like Bare Minerals or something? Yeah, they'll have some titanium dioxide in there as well. That's what gives it the SPF of 15. Okay, but the nice thing is unlike a sunscreen that uses a chemical to do that, the mineral sunblock will last until you wash it off. All right, we can also put all these other things there. Flame retardant, that slows the flame down. UV resistant, TiO2 could be a good UV resistant, but we could add another one, you know, the methylcinnamate or something like that, a chemical in there if we want more. Absorbency, we can add in some molecules that attract water. Wrinkle resistance, so we can put in some more cross-linking molecules to help it be more resilient. Anti-static, actually that's the same as absorbency because we just have to make the fiber a little moister and it won't have a problem with static. Antibacterial. I didn't mean that both of those are the same compound. I just meant anti and anti. Okay? Et cetera, et cetera. Pretty much anything you can think of, we can do to that dope. All right? So this is a really important modification for you to know about. And the really important thing is in yellow. This is permanent. All right? Once we dump that titanium oxide into that dope, we're not going to be getting it back out again. Okay? We can't go in there and pick out every tiny little molecular grain of titanium dioxide and make it all pure again. It's not possible. So it's permanent. Yes, ma'am?
How many tree fabrics that you like, hope you record since
when
everything's around the store shelf?
Yes.
Can you wash it? Will it wash from the off? Like, is it going to skin? Is that after?
Well, that's totally different because in many cases we'll put the finish or the wrinkle resistance on cotton, okay? And this, in this case, this is inside of the plastic, okay? And so, yeah, it's different. It doesn't wash off. It is permanent. But to be honest, we don't really have a big old problem with synthetics wrinkling in the first place. But maybe there's some situation where we wanted to make it even more wrinkle resistant. We could, okay? It had to be super, super resilient, all right? Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get to finishes because it's a separate.